Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're kicking things off with a paradox, a really fundamental one. Think about it. Our technical capacity today is just staggering. We can model global supply chains, sequence a genome in a few hours. We are, without a doubt, the most optimized, data-driven society in history.
Yeah.
And yet, if you look at the systems we actually live in, healthcare, our work lives, political discourse, they all feel profoundly fragile. You see burnout just skyrocketing. Institutions seem to lose all legitimacy overnight. Systems are collapsing in these weird, non-linear ways. Why? Why are we so optimized, yet so brittle?
That is the frustration at the heart of this, and it's exactly what our source material today tries to get at. We're doing a deep dive into The Coherence Constraint by Dr. Bechara Sikkeli and an AI co-author, ChatGPT 5.2. And the work argues that these failures you're describing, this fragility hidden under all the optimization, they're not really moral failures. They're not even, you know, just communication problems. They apparently stem from a single unavoidable structural rule, a kind of second-order boundary condition on reality itself.
A structural rule. So you're saying this is almost like a physics problem that determines whether our companies or even our own lives can survive.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
The coherence constraint is a rule that puts a limit on the admissible relations among our models, our metrics, our institutions. It basically says your different descriptions of reality, your proxies for success, they can't fundamentally contradict each other when the context shifts. And when you violate that constraint, the system starts to lose three critical things over time. Intelligibility, viability, and meaning.
Okay, so it's not enough to be correct in your own little silo. All the correct pieces have to actually fit together. And if they don't, what happens?
Well, you start racking up what the source calls coherence debt. This is a really central idea here. Coherence debt is the buildup of deferred incompatibilities. Think of it as suppressed perspectives, ignored feedback, or just running your internal buffers down to zero. It's the price you pay for demanding short-term performance while ignoring these deeper conflicts.
Can you give me a real-world example, something that clicks immediately?
Of course. The easiest one is technical debt and software. A programmer takes a shortcut to meet a deadline. The code works fine for now, but that quick fix introduces a deep incompatibility that makes every future update exponentially harder. Or, at an institutional level, it's like deferring infrastructure maintenance. The bridge stands today, but every year the cost to fix it grows, and not in a straight line. The system looks fine, it's reporting great numbers, but it's quietly eating its own future.
I see. So when the system finally breaks, when the bridge collapses or a person hits total burnout, it isn't some sudden random event.
Not at all. It's the structural bill finally coming due, and usually with massive interest. The collapse is just the moment the debt becomes visible because there's zero capacity left to absorb any kind of shock. Which brings us right to why optimization, our modern obsession, so often backfires.
Right. It feels like our default setting is to optimize. Measure everything, maximize the result, and you win. So where does that go wrong from a coherence perspective?
It's because of fragmentation. See, the problem isn't that we lack knowledge. We have incredibly precise, correct descriptions for almost everything. But they're all in silos. Your economic model, which is perfectly correct on its own terms, might demand zero inventory to maximize efficiency. Meanwhile, your ecological model, also correct, shows that this level of consumption is destroying the resource base. Both are true, but they can't form a coherent, viable whole.
So it's the difference between being precisely right about one tiny gear and completely wrong about how the whole machine works.
And that is the efficiency trap. We confuse short-term optimization with long-term viability. And in the race to optimize, what's the first thing to go?
Buffers. Redundancy.
Always. They're treated as waste. That extra inventory, that bit of slack in an employee's schedule, that unused server capacity, it all looks like a cost to be eliminated on a spreadsheet. So it's ruthlessly cut. The source argues that this kind of optimization destroys the very slack that makes adaptation possible. It quietly erodes your recoverability. So when a shock hits, a pandemic, a supply chain disruption, the failure is blamed on the shock. But the shock just revealed the fragility that was already built into the system.
Wow. And underneath this whole optimization fetish is what the source calls the hidden assumption of a privileged perspective. What does that actually mean for an organization?
It's the belief that there's one right model or the correct metric that's just better than all the others and can dictate everything. It's sort of the modern version of saying, my map isn't just a map, it's the actual territory.
And as soon as we pick that privileged proxy, say, a key performance indicator, a KPI, we stop trying to understand reality and we start just trying to game the indicator.
That's proxy drift, exactly. The moment a proxy becomes the target, it stops being useful. Every actor in the system just adapts their behavior to hit the number, often destroying the actual outcome you wanted in the first place. Think of a call center focused only on calls per hour. The metric soars, but customer satisfaction just craters.
The KPI stops being a guide and tries to become the goal itself, but it's a distorted, funhouse mirror version of the goal, and trust just evaporates because people on the ground can see the system is just serving its own weird logic, not reality.
Precisely. And this leads to this really amazing convergence the source talks about.
Okay, let's unpack this, because it's one thing to say our systems are flawed, but it's a whole other level to say this is governed by the same rules as physics.
It's a huge claim, but it's compelling. This same constraint shows up independently across three totally different domains. First up, general relativity. Einstein basically had a coherence crisis in physics. How could the laws of nature be the same for everyone, no matter how they were moving?
Right. If gravity worked differently depending on your speed, there'd be no objective reality to even talk about.
And his big move was to reject the idea of privileged physical frames. No single observer, no coordinate system, could be treated as fundamentally special or correct. The laws had to be defined by what stayed the same, what remained invariant when you transform between perspectives. With GR, invariance actually comes before interpretation.
So if reality itself demands coherence across all possible perspectives,
then the coherence constraint just extends that logic. It says no single representational perspective, no model, no metric, no narrative can be given that kind of absolute privilege. If your organization needs one true perspective to function, it is, by definition, structurally fragile.
That's a deep analogy. If you violate coherence, you don't just break your company, you break the same rule that holds physics together. What's the second pillar?
Complex adaptive systems, or CAS. This is the science of life, of survival. And CAS shows us that survival isn't about peak efficiency. It's about maintaining coherence under disturbance. Viability, the ability to keep going, is a structural property, not just an outcome you hope for. And any viable system, whether it's an ecosystem or an economy, builds in resilience through redundancy, slack, and buffers.
The very things that the optimization mindset sees as waste.
The very same things. When a hospital tries to maximize bed turnover to hit a financial target, they cut the slack needed to handle a sudden surge of patients. They become hyper-efficient and, at the same time, completely non-viable under any real stress. So the lesson from CAS is that efficiency, when taken too far, becomes destructive because it removes your capacity for recoverability.
The ability to bounce back is more important than just running at maximum speed when everything's perfect.
It's everything. Systemic collapse is almost always the result of violating that need for margins.
And that's a perfect lead-in to the third pillar, information geometry, which brings us right into our own minds and to how we know things.
Yeah, information geometry is maybe the most abstract part, but it has the clearest lesson. It reframes knowledge not as some static truth, but as inference as movement on a manifold, a sort of geometric space of all possible beliefs.
So when I get new information and update my beliefs, I'm literally moving across this landscape.
You are. And the shape of that landscape determines how stable your knowledge is.
Mm.
Certainty, that feeling of being absolutely 100% right, corresponds to a landscape with very high curvature. Imagine walking on a knife's edge.
A tiny gust of wind, a small piece of new evidence, and you fall off completely. A catastrophic failure.
That's high curvature. It's the geometry of overfitting. It's a belief system that works perfectly under known conditions, but completely shatters when things change just a little bit. It's why rigid ideologies are so brittle.
So the goal isn't to find the highest, sharpest peak of certainty.
No. The goal is low curvature inference. You want to be in a wide, stable valley where your beliefs are recoverable, where you can adjust smoothly to new data without a total system collapse. The source makes a provocative claim here. Recoverability matters more than accuracy. Things like proxy drift or AI hallucination. Those are just signatures of high curvature, low coherent systems failing.
Here's where it gets really interesting. How does this all apply to our actual lives? Let's talk about burnout, because that feels so pervasive.
Right. If you apply the coherence constraint, you get a totally new definition of health. It's not just the absence of disease, it's intrinsic viability. It's your body's structural capacity to maintain its integrity when it's under constant pressure. Your lab metrics, your blood pressure, your cholesterol, they track components. Coherence tracks the viability of the whole system.
Which explains that feeling so many people have, where all their tests come back normal, but they feel like they're completely falling apart. The components are working, but the system's integrity is gone.
Exactly. Burnout and chronic disease are classic coherence failures. They are the body's adaptive responses. It's trying to cope. But those responses can't resolve because the critical internal buffers are gone. The energy reserves, the repair capacity, the deep sleep. They've all been optimized away. The body can't recover, and the debt gets paid through a systemic breakdown.
So you're shifting the frame from individual failure, I'm not resilient enough, to a structural one, the system I'm in has eliminated my ability to recover.
That's the key shift. And you can take that right up to the level of institutions. They're supposed to be coherence machines, right? Mm-hmm. They help us translate between different viewpoints so we can act together. But they're failing because of that KPI trap we talked about.
The institution privileges one narrow metric, and in doing so, it starts to destroy its own purpose, its own coherence.
It replaces judgment with compliance.
Yeah.
You end up with performance without meaning, and that is what destroys trust.
And the source has a very specific definition of trust, not as a feeling, but as something structural.
Trust is defined as an inference about recoverability. You trust a system when you believe that if an error happens, and errors always happen, it will be caught and repaired without causing you disproportionate harm. When an institution starts hiding mistakes or punishing dissent to protect its metrics, it's signaling it has no recoverability. That's when trust and legitimacy just vanish.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the whole argument really comes down to this formal principle they call the conservation of coherence debt.
That's the big one. It's like a law of thermodynamics for human systems. It says that deferred incompatibilities must be repaid. You can't just keep consuming viability and suppressing context forever. Reality always collects on that debt.
So what does this all mean? It's not some new ideology we're supposed to adopt. It sounds more like a boundary condition, a rule from reality that applies to anything that wants to last.
It's an orientation tool. It helps you see when you're making a trade exchanging future viability for some immediate gain.
Which brings us to the most practical part. If optimization is the default, the source gives us a powerful heuristic. When not to optimize? When did we actively push back?
The rule of thumb is to resist optimization when it requires three things: eliminating redundancy, compressing critical time buffers, or overriding local on-the-ground judgment. If you're being asked to do any of those, you're almost certainly just trading coherence for a short-term performance bump. Choosing not to optimize in those moments is how you consciously preserve the ability to adapt and recover later.
That's huge. It takes all the messy, inefficient-looking human parts of our lives, the slack, the time to just think, the margin for error, and reframes them not as weaknesses, but as non-negotiable structural needs for survival.
It does. It makes you ask a deeper question. What actually matters? The ultimate test of meaning isn't certainty, it's survival. Meaning is what survives transformation. What persists across different contexts, across generations. Anything that collapses when the context shifts was never truly stable. But what lasts? That was carrying coherence all along. And our responsibility is just the careful stewardship of that coherence in everything we do.